want answers?
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth!
You can't handle the truth!
Dave Hodges is as mad as hell, and he's not gonna take it anymore.
I'd like to hug your tattoo, so really, really would, but the din in my head, it's too much and it's no good. I'm standing in a window tunnel, shouting through the roar, and I'd like to get the information, asking for what blood makes noise. It's ringing in my ear, blood makes noise, and I can't really hear you in the thickening of fear.
Common sense is not so common. This is the Common Sense Show with Dave Hodges.
Good evening, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of the Common Sense Show. This is Dave Hodges, your host, and flying co-pilot with me is Katie. Yes, Katie's back from her wonderful time, and maybe she'll elaborate on during the health segment. She went to a reunion, and those are always great fun, and she's back. This is the first time in 3 weeks we've had the whole crew together, so it's good to be here. We've got a great show for you this evening. In the first hour, we've got Chris Kitsey, and we've got, in the second hour, we've got Mike Adams. And in the third hour, like I said, we got Katie, and then in the bottom of the third hour, uh-oh, you better watch out. Yours truly has a huge revelation that I'm going public with. You'll get part of it tonight, and you'll have to read the rest of it mañana, probably tomorrow afternoon. Anyway, I want to take care of some business here and let you know who makes us possible, how we get to come to you every Sunday evening. First of all, I don't need to tell you, with all the headlines out there, economic collapse imminent, economic collapse is the doorstep, experts saying economic collapse. Listen, if you have your money in the bank, you have the bulk of your money in the bank, you're setting yourself up for failure. You're running out of time. You need to go to Renaissance Precious Metals, owned by my good friend Steve Quayle, who, by the way, want to give a little promo here. Steve and I are Doug Hagman's guest tomorrow night here on the Global Star Radio Network. And that is 7 p.m. Eastern, and it's going to be a blockbuster show. But Steve can help you convert your soon-to-be worthless cash into precious metals. And I'm a happy customer. I give him my highest recommendation, so give Steve a call in the morning at 406-586-4842. That's 406-586-4842. And last week we had Bob Griswold on from ReadyMadeResources.com, and we have rave reviews over his hour on our show. And he is Mr. Prepper. You've heard right out of the horse's mouth. There's not much this guy doesn't know about how to take care of yourself. And if you want to find out about his great product line, go to readymaderesources.com and give him a call in the morning at 800-627-3809. That's 800-627-3809. And, of course, if there is a currency collapse, there's going to be food shortages, and you don't think Obama and his merry band of friends aren't going to use food against you, not manipulate you. Hey, cross this line, come into our friendly camp, and you'll have all the food you want. But don't put yourself in that position. We recommend everybody have enough storable food for up to a year, you know, minimum 6 months. But that's for everybody in your family. And to do that, the best prices, the best quality, I'm a customer. Go to Numana.com/Hodges. Again, that's Numana.com/Hodges. Well, we just have one more to take care of, and this blends right into our first guest. I am a proud participant in Seen.life. And just like it sounds, and you hear me talk about it every week here, SEEN.life, it's the replacement for Facebook. You will not find caricatures of thugs slitting police officers' throats. You won't see assassinate Donald Trump pages, and you will not be banned for telling the truth about Hillary Clinton. And all those things happen on Facebook. And our growth has exploded. It continues to explode. Doug Hagman gave me a commitment the other night on the phone. He's coming in, and that's going to mean a lot of people are going to follow in as well. Steve Quayle is a member. I mean, we are picking up some real notables because people see through Facebook. It's the NSA creation, Seen.life. Well, that leads right into our first guest, Chris Kitsey, who I've known for a few years, and Chris, it is my honor to know you, and I want to say this publicly. Of all the people I've done business with, I don't think anybody has a leg up on you in terms of integrity and honesty. And I speak from personal experience, but you have done a wonderful job with BeforeIt'sNews.com, being the founder and the owner. And now Scene.life is just going to take off like crazy. And eventually we're going to put Facebook on their heels. Hi, Chris, and welcome to the show.
Hi, Dave. Thanks for your kind words. And, you know, welcome to all your listeners.
Yeah, it's great to have you on. And your site, let's talk about the two sites just for a second before we launch into what's ailing the world from our perspective. But your site, Before It's News, is really kind of a blend of professional journalism. You've got some great contributors. You know, my favorite there is Lisa Haven. I mean, she's just outstanding. She's been a guest on this show several times. And then you've got novices out there that just see things and write, and they have a place on Before It's News. So it's citizen journalism also at its grassroots. You want to comment on that, please?
That's actually true. You know, we built Before It's News for the contributors. We built it for the people who have a story to share without censorship and where they want to be able to get their news out to a large audience very quickly. And I don't think there's any other place on the internet, because we've left it as pretty much of an open source kind of a website. I don't think there's any other place on the internet where someone can go and get an account, open up the account for the first time, post a story, and have it appear in front of an audience of 8 million people on the front page. So that's the premise of Before It's News. And of course, you know, the way it works is it's the popular stories. If you write something that's popular and you put it out there, and let's say that you you see something with like a military convoy, or you see something with something that looks suspicious, you get some videos, you get some pictures, you're welcome to put it up on the website. Write up a story. Doesn't have to be, the grammar doesn't have to be perfect. Don't worry about that. We're just looking for hard-hitting facts and, you know, people who are truth-tellers. That's really what we're looking for. So when we started the website, it's been, I think, about 6 years now, and we get about almost 8 million people a month coming to the website. So it's a pretty popular site, and, you know, I think it'd be even more popular if we weren't being constantly tamped down. And you know, we've seen we could probably spend a whole hour just going through stories of how the internet is being monitored and censored. And it's not just the obvious things like on Facebook. It's all the behind the scenes things, like you try and make a connection to a certain story and all of a sudden, wow, what's going on? Their website's having a bad day. Well, the website's not having a bad day. It's just that they're shaping your traffic and making it so you can't get to where you want to go, because they don't want you to see it.
You are so correct. I've got a neighbor who lives two doors down and who listens to the show, and he's probably listening right now. And he was telling me by text today how he was trying to access my archives, and he had to go in a very roundabout way to do it. He felt Verizon was blocking him. And this guy, highly intelligent, knows his way around a computer. And it just is, I'll give you another example. This is one for mine. I mean, I was looking at one of the analytics programs that I look at that tells me what my traffic is. And, you know, this is public, so I don't mind saying this. My traffic range per day is between 40 and about 70,000 visits that come in. And we're on pace to set a record for this month. But yesterday's traffic, 7,000. Well, wait a minute. All the other indicators I have, Chris, you know, my commission sales on my website, you know, that includes Google AdSense and so forth, they were all operating at normal levels. The income levels, the revenue did not drop, yet the analytic programs said that my traffic was down by about 1,000%. That's just not the case. But they do that to screw with you, so when people come and look at you and to potentially want to advertise with you, they're hoping they can take that away and destroy any chance you have of making ends meet. And I'm sure you experienced the same thing in fact, I know you experienced that Before It's News.
Absolutely. And it seems to be getting worse. We think what's going to happen here as things heat up this fall, we think that we're going to start to see a number of cyber attacks, false flag cyber attacks. They'll probably, you know, use China or as the patsy. And, you know, not that they're going to be doing good things anyway, but they're going to be convenient fall guys for what could happen this fall. And we've seen this before. One day I was just getting up, going on to all the websites, and I hit Before It's News, and it was a white screen. And then I said, wait a second, what's going on? Is my internet connection broken? So I went to CNN. It was a white screen. I went to the Weather Channel. It was fine. I went to a number of other news websites. It was only news websites that were blocked. And basically what happened was when I turned on my VPN, everything was normal. So it was my ISP, Comcast, who was intentionally blocking only certain websites. And it was obviously a test.
Yeah, that really goes right to what my neighbor was telling me in terms of him having trouble accessing my archives on the net. You know, one of the things, Chris, that I've begun to do, and I've started putting this out, and I'm getting a lot of censorship, but we're smart to get around it. We know how to get around this crap. But let me just share with you what we're doing. We're going to the Skype interviews and these individual podcasts where I'll pick a topic out and talk about it, and we might go 10 to 20 minutes, and 20 minutes is on the high side. And we're off the system when we do that. We're using Skype, which is not yet tampered with. And then eventually, you know, as the internet clears up, because we have internet interference where I'm at constantly, and it always happens on a regular basis, and then we bring those back in. So, I mean, we will adjust. And in fact, actually, are you hearing rumors about a dissident group formally connected with the military? I'm trying to choose my words carefully so I don't give away who's telling me these things, but they are going to bring out a new internet for people to join that they say is tamper-proof and get them outside the system now that's controlled at the VPN level. Have you heard that?
Well, you know, I have not heard that, but there are a number of people who have, you know, the dark web, which actually, mm-hmm. if you look at the history of it, things like Tor, BitTorrent, and Onion Router with Tor, that was basically a project from the U.S. Navy, and I actually know somebody who's over there, and he's a good guy. But they, there's a number of good uses for those kind of technologies. But unfortunately, the way they're designed and architected, they can all be used, taken over essentially, and track everything. And I think what it does, it gives people a false sense of security, and therefore it becomes a honeypot. It just attracts people, and you know, these are bad people, some of them, and that's been proven. For example, Silk Road, when they brought that down, they had gone through, and people were using Tor, and they had gotten caught using Tor. That's how they found all these guys. So they have ways mm-hmm. to track everybody on these supposedly untrackable systems. And but I think the main thing, you know, what we're mostly concerned with is getting the truth and getting information out to people. So it's a different kind of a communications problem than anonymity. We're not really trying to help people become anonymous. And the company we have in Iceland, Unseen, actually is focused on the privacy and security, not on the anonymity.
So, yeah, let's back up for a second. Tell the audience what Unseen is before we go further with that.
Sure. So we noticed this a number of years ago, and so 4 years ago we started a company called Unseen to provide a very secure way for people to communicate. It turns out that there are a lot of people who, good people, who are being interfered with and tracked by various governments. And I'm not even talking about the U.S. government here. I'm talking about foreign powers. And this is here in the U.S. And these are people who are from China. And they were being persecuted in China. They come to the U.S. and they're still being persecuted here by people going through the government at home, going through all their stuff here. So we built this system. And the idea behind it was to provide security and also privacy. So it's not like you're going to be able to hide who you are, because in fact the other people you're communicating with want to know that it's really you. But what you have is you have a need for security, cryptography, and some of the technology solutions that we have. And the biggest problem, actually, it turns out, with products like Gmail, even with Skype, is that they're now centralized. Skype is owned by Microsoft, and they're all centralized now. And so that means everything goes through those companies, and the companies keep the keys. And they have access to the keys, which are the ways that you keep your security. With Unseen, you keep your own key if you want. We aren't part of any kind of government program because the company is hosted in Iceland. The company is based in Iceland. And, we do get requests sometimes from people and governments that say, hand over this stuff, and we just say, come to Iceland and get a court order, and we can give you, and we can help you with whatever you need to, because we do have to follow the law, and we follow the law in Iceland. That's how we operate. So it's been very good for our users. We get very, very few requests. What it does, it's a speed bump, just going offshore. I mean, there's a reason why people moved their money offshore many years ago, and that's because it's not like they're trying to cheat on taxes, although I think there are probably people like that here and there. But mostly it's because people want asset protection. You just want to protect your data. You want to keep it out of the hands of just people who just come and just, you know, get a blanket order to go through and rifle through your sock drawer. And these are people who aren't doing anything wrong. They just want more privacy. They just don't want someone going through their sock drawer without a warrant. And that's, it's just that simple. So that's what we build Unseen for.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you've taken the operation to Iceland. Why did you choose Iceland?
Well, we looked at all the different countries. I mean, you know, we've been to Panama. We looked at Norway. We looked at, you know, first of all, you need a certain amount of infrastructure. You need something that is going to provide a certain level of technology service. You know, Iceland is actually a fairly high-tech country. They have very cheap electricity. And this is all generated by the volcano there. So it's a, you know, it's a very green operation if that's important to you. We like it because the electricity is cheap. The first rack that we got there has 60 amps for starters. And, you know, compared to California where you get 10 amps. And then they just start charging you huge amounts of money to add more power. So it's a very, you know, energy plentiful place. And if I had any downsides to it, it's the network, and there are only three or four ways in and out of Iceland, and you know, that's the biggest issue. So, but it's served us well. We do have some times when the network traffic gets messed around with, and we've actually documented this and seen how they do it. They'll just start dropping packets. It's the same thing they do here. So if they don't like what you're doing, it doesn't matter where you are, they'll find you, and, you know, it's all part of one giant network.
Well, I like the fact that you chose Iceland for another reason, too, and that's when the bailouts were going here and we were being raped and pillaged by the powers that be in corporate America and Wall Street. Iceland threw those people in jail. They said, we're not going to put up with this.
That's right. And the, you know, we've met a number of members of parliament in Iceland. That's how accessible the government is there. The first time we went there, I met with four members of parliament. They have a party that they call themselves the Pirate Party. They're not actually pirates, although they're very fun loving people. But they, you know, they're focused on freedom. And, you know, the government of Iceland actually does represent the people of Iceland, which is something you cannot say in most places in the world. And they're very big on protecting people. For example, Bobby Fischer, you know, he had his chess championship one time in Iceland, and then he ran into trouble with the U.S. government and over a contest that he had in the former Yugoslavia. And he was in Japan. They took his passport away. And so Iceland said, well, Bobby Fischer has always been great for Iceland. We'll give him asylum, and they got him a passport and sent him back to Iceland, and that's where he ended up living out the rest of his days. So people in Iceland are very friendly people, very intelligent people. It's just a good place. I mean, the other reason we went there was because these Chinese people that were trying to help out, they had a problem, actually, with the when the persecution of Falun Gong started in 1999. They had a problem. There were 100 million people in China doing this meditation, by the way. And it's a very good meditation. We have a number of people in our company who do it. And what happened is they went to when the persecution started, Jiang Zemin, who was the premier of China, went over to Iceland to visit. And the Chinese really had their eye on Iceland because it's in a strategic location. It's in the northern part of the Atlantic, equally between the European and North American continents. In fact, Iceland is right where the two plates meet. That's what formed Iceland. That's why the volcanoes are there. So Jiang Zemin goes there, and practitioners for this of the meditation called Falun Gong decided to protest. They decided to picket and, you know, let people know about the persecution that was going on. Well, what happened was the Chinese convinced the Icelandic government to not let the people in. They blocked a bunch of them, and then they detained probably 50 or 100 more that were in Iceland. When the Icelandic people found out about this, they were furious, and 3,000 people marched on the parliament building there called the Althingi and demanded that the government release the practitioners, and they did. And they stand up, just like you said with the bankers, they actually stand up for what is the right thing to do. And, you know, the bankers, it turns out it was probably 8 or 10 people who basically destroyed the economy in Iceland and then left all these, you know, the pieces on the floor for somebody else to pick up. In the U.S., if that happened, these guys would be out living in, you know, in some kind of a villa somewhere on the South Seas or something in some in luxury. And in Iceland, these guys are now cooling their heels in jail. So that's the difference between Iceland. These are people of principle and high moral character. If you drop your wallet on the street in the middle of Reykjavik, you will probably get it back with everything in it. There are very few places in the world you can say that. So if you really think about it, the main reason we're there is because of the moral character of Icelandic people.
Well, I've written about Iceland quite a bit, and I said, in my opinion, was the only country left in the world that was outside the control of the New World Order. And then I looked at their immigration laws, Chris. It's almost impossible to relocate there.
It's difficult. I mean, it's, you know, it's possible, and they've had people from, they were a Schengen country, so they've had people coming there from Europe, mostly Poles, and the reason the Poles went there was because they thought they could get free, you know, free goodies in Iceland. But, you know, quite frankly, most people, first of all, the name is Iceland, and they don't want to go someplace that's all icy. So you have, I think, almost no Arab people in Iceland. The second thing is you have, you know, most people look at this and say, well, where would I rather spend my time, in Southern California on the beach, Hawaii on the beach, or in Iceland, where the highest temperature ever recorded was 80 degrees Fahrenheit. So it's not perceived to be, you know, a warm and, you know, sunny place. And in the winter, that's true. Summertime, of course, they have midnight sun, or at least it almost never gets dark. I mean, when I've been there in the summer, it's, you know, you're literally out reading the newspaper at 11 o'clock at night. So it's, you know, it's a different kind of a world, different kind of lifestyle. But, you know, there are a lot of very interesting things about Iceland. 10% of the people in Iceland have published a book. They've written and published a book. That's just unheard of. So they're special people. And the other thing is they've managed to preserve their original culture, which was handed down to them by the Norse. And the original Norse language is Icelandic. So Norwegian, which is the modern language in Norway, is, you know, 800 years newer than what they speak in Iceland. If someone from Norway wants to find out their history, they go to Iceland and read the sagas, because they've been preserved in Iceland.
It's an amazing place, and like I said, I could probably, if I really was motivated today, I could relocate my family there, but my spouse would have said, what, are you crazy? Without really knowing a whole lot about it. But it's the one country that's really outside the control of the New World Order. And what do you suppose allows them to be independent of Brussels and the Basel bankers and the Rockefellers and so forth?
Well, I wouldn't say they're completely independent. They do have the central bank, and the central bank started in 1961. And it is, the central bank itself is owned by the government. But, you know, there are a few things I can tell you that I can't tell you on the air here, but there are, you know, obviously this network of New World Order is a global network. It's inside of almost everything. And there are, just like you would imagine, there are still, you know, people in all these different places that are, you know, serving the goals of that. And although I will say this, in Iceland, People are independent. They think for themselves. They're very clear thinking. And they're onto this. They, you know, we actually have a lot of Before It's News readers from Iceland. We have people there who said, oh, I know you from Before It's News. And they've been following all this stuff, and they are totally up to speed on what the Bilderbergers are up to and everybody else. So it's a very interesting place.
Do they have chemtrails?
You know, they do, but not so much. I mean, not nearly like we do in the U.S. And even Europe. You know, I was in Switzerland actually a few weeks ago, and they even have them in Switzerland. So it's you know, pretty much everywhere in Europe. Although, you know, you think about it, it's expensive to run a chemtrail because you're basically buying, you know, trimethyl aluminum at I don't know how much a gallon, $200 a gallon or something like that. And so it's very expensive, and I just don't see that they have a need to do it, because why do you need to worry about 300,000 people on a tiny island out in the middle of nowhere? So it's, you know, the planes, I'm sure, are loaded up with things like that, but I don't think that they do it very often. That's every time I've been there, I haven't really seen the kind of chemtrailing that you see in places like the Midwest of the United States or the West Coast. The West Coast seems to get the worst because obviously if they spray here, it goes all the way across the whole country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with the prevailing winds, there's no question. Iceland, I just find such an intriguing place because they've retained so much of their independence. Let's shift gears from that is kind of a segue into our country. Here we have Donald Trump leading this independent movement, a populist movement, if you will, where he's awakened millions, and really he's done for us in the independent media what we weren't able to do for ourselves over 10 years. I mean, we did an admirable job, but he has exploded people's awareness. I mean, people now are talking about free trade agreements in public. You know, I'm in a restaurant the other day, and I'm hearing these guys saying, yeah, we got to get rid of these damn free trade agreements. And you wouldn't hear this kind of thing, you know, a year ago or 2 years ago. Do you think that we're going to have an election? And number two, do you think Trump is going to be able to institute some of the reforms he's promising?
Well, let's start with Donald Trump. When he first came on the scene, you know, as you know, from the news side of things, which is where, you know, Before It's News, we were one of the first news websites to really cover Donald Trump and his candidacy in a serious manner. And, you know, we took him serious. We took him seriously. We didn't think he was just some kind of flash in the pan. We didn't think he was just looking to go out and, you know, brand himself a little bit more. He's at the point in his life where he just doesn't care about that kind of stuff anymore. And actually, he's on a stronger mission. So that part of it, I think, is very, very interesting. Now, keep in mind, you don't get $1 billion without playing ball with the big guys. That's just a fact. So the question is, how much is Donald Trump dependent on, and how much is he willing to do for and roll over for, you know, the powers that be? And that is the one thing that is not yet determined. But so far, from what we've seen, we're very, very enthusiastic about what we're seeing. And the fact is that when you start to see all the heads exploding, that is usually a very good sign from the various different constituencies who are, you know, whose oxes are being gored. So that's step one. That's the first thing with Donald Trump. The second thing that we had thought was, wow, if this guy is really serious about what he's saying, there are a lot of people who have died trying to do what he wants to do. And you think about it, JFK, you think about all RFK,
Larry
JFK
McDonald,
Jr.,
yeah. Yep.
Larry, all these people, there's hundreds of them, right? And the question is then, you know, why is they, at first, you know, you and I talked about this many months ago. I thought, wow, they're just going to kill him. And I think what's happened is, there's a couple things. One is, it's not like the old days where you could do something like that. Everybody's got a TV camera, a video camera in their pocket now. That's totally changed the entire, you know, battle space, if you will. It's all being recorded. It's all live. It's all going on Facebook, going on the social media, going on everything. And people will post a story, post a video, and it will go viral. And then you got millions and millions of people who see this stuff. Very, very hard to put the genie back in the bottle. That's one. The second thing is, I think there are some people inside at some of these agencies who are good people and who are saying, if you guys hurt him, we've got ways to hurt you back. That's what's different now compared to before. Now, I'm still concerned, you know, is there going to even be an election? And I know some people are thinking, you know, put away the tinfoil hat. But if you really think about this, you know, the chance that they have a number of chances to do this. One was at the Republican convention, which thankfully was very peaceful. And I would attribute that to the fact that the Twitter leaks of the founder of Black Lives Matter made the public airways. And they just decided not to, they pulled that operation. The question is what they're going to do with the Democratic convention. And they may pull that operation too. They were going to have, you know, summer of chaos. And now what's happening, fortunately, is we're starting to see pushback against these people who are inciting all this hate for the police. I mean, don't these people understand what's going to happen if the police get treated like this, where people are out targeting and assassinating the police? Well, they're going to quit. They're going to go home and protect their families. And then what's left? Well, then you're going to have martial law, of course, which is the reason why they wanted to do that in the first place. But I think people are now waking up to that, and they're standing up for the policemen. They're standing up for, they're believing what Donald Trump is saying, and they're saying we have to support the police. There are a lot of good police. There are some bad ones, too. And yes, there are some bad things happening. I think the police are probably over-militarized. I think there are some of them, there are some bad apples in there who are pumped up on steroids. And they just, you know, their whole mind just goes off, and they just start blasting innocent people, and that's not right. We don't want that to happen either. But I think what's happening is that we're seeing society taking a stand and saying, hey, we need to have, if we're going to have a society, we're going to have to treat these people well because they're helping to serve society and protect society. And I think that you know, it's going to be very interesting. I'm still not convinced there's going to be an election because there are a number of ways they can call it. And then, of course, if you vote, I mean, I don't know if you saw the story about the, in fact, I think I saw it in one of your articles this last couple of days, Dave, which was the Stanford survey about the, the voting.
Exactly. Yep. The study that said that when you use electronic machines in the Democratic primary, that Hillary Clinton exceeded expectations by 9%, but when there was paper ballots, the expectations met the results. So she, and by the way, the two, and I don't have the names of them in front of me, but the two major manufacturers of these voting machines are Hillary Clinton contributors.
Right, and that's the, that is the whole problem right there. The electronic voting machines, there's no audit trail. There's no, it's not like you've got some kind of a blockchain in back of it that's tamper-proof. It's all, I mean, and we remember the results from in 2012, right, when people went to go vote for Mitt Romney, and they pushed Mitt Romney, says, thank you for voting for Obama. I mean, you saw the videos, right?
Yeah, I did.
Yep. So that's the kind of thing that I think what we're doing is we're rapidly approaching the Banana Republic stage, not just in terms of people not being held accountable and in the eyes of the law, which is where we have with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, but we have the same issue now with the voting, and that's when the exit polls no longer match reality. That's one of the symptoms of voting fraud. It's when you do the interviews and you're off. I mean, you always expect to be off by like 3 to 5% because, you know, some people just don't want to tell you how they voted because for whatever reason. But the fact is that it is considered to be a means of testing whether an election is honest or not.
Well, you're right. In fact, the margin of error on those surveys that Stanford employed was less than 5%, which is standard in the research industry. And their research was stellar. And it was interesting to me because I'm an academic. You know, I work at that level. And I have to tell you, I've never seen a research study that got into political commentary. But at the conclusion of the study, they said that they had grave concerns about the integrity of elections. And you don't see that very often from an academic institution. In Stanford, I mean, you got to remember, Stanford housed SRI, the Stanford Research Institute, which is a CIA experimental group on mind control, with Jose Delgado there at the helm for a long time. They're liberal, and they're saying this. It's incredible. It's absolutely incredible what we're seeing.
Yep, that's correct. Although, actually, I think the actual study itself was independent of Stanford, but the person who did it, one of them, was a graduate student at Stanford. And, you know, I did some research on that later this afternoon, and it was, you know, it's interesting. It's all true. They're trying to discredit these people and say whatever they can to say it's not true. But the fact is, the numbers, and this person, one of the people who was in the, who did this study, he basically came through and said, you know, here are the numbers, and the numbers are the numbers. And he said that you can't explain them any other way.
Right.
And he's a professional statistician, you know, graduate student level type of statistical analysis. And, I mean, at some point, people are going to have to say, hey, wait a second here. You know, when you start stealing the elections, then it's like you've lost the consent of the governed.
Well, I think if Hillary is elected in light of everything that's happened, I think we're going to see that anyway. If we don't have martial law before the election, we're certainly going to have it before next summer because, you know, the people are already saying this, Chris. They're already saying, if she doesn't have to follow the law, then I don't have to follow the law. And this is rank-and-file people saying this, not people who go to Before It's News and write articles. And I think that they know they're headed for a major, major problem if she's elected. You know, I talked to one of my military sources, and he told me this, and I'm going to say I don't endorse this, so Secret Service, you can stay home because I'm not advocating for anything. But they said to me that they felt that if Hillary Clinton becomes unelectable, in other words, the margin of a vote against her is so big, and it's trending that way now with the people who don't trust her, that if she's not electable, they may assassinate her. The New World Order. And this
sure.
is something I was told
sure.
by, and by the way, I'm never going to reveal a source. You can come throw me in the NDAA jail of your choice, but I'm not going to reveal who told me this. But do you think that's a possibility?
Absolutely. They seem to have no problem killing people, and, you know, in their eyes, everybody's expendable. So, you know, they have a program, and they're in the middle of trying to implement it. I mean, there's a lot of other reasons why this whole thing is happening and mm-hmm. why they need to implement martial law so that they can start to lock everything down. But, you know, there's a whole variety of possibilities. It's like a big company. You know, they have plan A, plan B, and plan C. And plan A is the main plan. And if that one doesn't work out, they've got three or four different plan Bs and five or six
right.
different plan Cs. So all they're doing is just playing it out.
I'm not advocating violence against Clinton, but I will tell you this. I would have a party and invite my whole neighborhood if she went to jail, and which she should already be in. But do you think that we're going to see a series? I think it's possible, maybe even probable, that if the polls keep going where they are. I read a stat, Chris, and it wasn't like this many people for Clinton, this many people for Trump. That's too superficial. I read two things, and I actually wrote an article on this, is that Trump is starting to kick her butt in the swing states. And he may not even win the popular election, but have enough electoral votes to carry the election because that's where he's focusing his efforts on a limited budget. But then the other thing that I read was the people's perception of Clinton. Her character ratings are astronomically going into the toilet. And Trump's aren't good, but hers are a lot worse, and they're dropping a lot quicker than Trump is. And I'm looking at these numbers, and I'm saying, if there's not a turnaround here, you know, if she doesn't rescue a cat out of the tree or help an old lady across the street and it's caught on TV, I don't think she is electable, because you might be able to swing an election 10%, you can't swing it 30%. Then they got to bring in martial law.
Well, that's exactly right. And they have, if you think about it, there's, you know, what a friend of mine, in fact, a guy who used to work for BeForeIt's News before he passed away, he told me, he said that typically the Republicans have assumed that there is a 5% fraud margin. That's just the, in order for a Republican to win, they have to overcome the 5% margin of fraud. So they have to win by 6% in order to win. And I think this is, it's probably a higher number than that with the current presidential candidate. But I think that once you see, once people see more of what's going on, and I think that what could also happen, Dave, is that a lot of the emails, the ones that were inside that email server, they get dumped out. And you have to remember, look at the dump that happened over the weekend with the DNC saying all these bad things about Bernie. You know, they basically rigged the whole thing. The whole thing was completely rigged. Of course, who said that a month or two ago was Donald Trump. So he's ahead of the power curve on a lot of this stuff. And, you know, that's my big concern, is that if Donald Trump is going to, if he wins, and if he, and it looks very possible like he could, what is he going to have to do to affect any kind of real change? And I, you know, I've discussed this with you off the record and with some other friends of mine, and I said, well, he's going to have to go and completely clean house and find all the people and hold them to account. So if someone did anything bad, they should get punished and they should go to jail if that's what's necessary. And I had a friend of mine, she said, well, how many people is that? I said, probably at least 10,000 people have to go to jail. And she said, well, you got to be kidding me. And I said, well, you got audited by the IRS. This is what I told her. I said, you got audited by the IRS. They had, the government ended up paying you back another $8,000, but you had to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars. She's very wealthy. Hundreds of thousands of dollars to go through and, you know, basically defend yourself against the IRS machine. And so she said, yeah, well, these people who audited us, why did they get audited? Because a week before, they had invited people, they invited Marco Rubio to their house for a fundraiser. 1 week later, they get audited. It's being used as a political weapon.
And I've experienced it,
you know,
too.
If this stuff, yep, if this stuff comes out, I'm going to tell you something. There are a lot of people, and that's illegal. That is not a legal thing to do.
Well, you're right, and we're talking about Lois Lerner, the head of the IRS. Then you got Comey, who sat on the board at HSBC. And by the way, folks, we're getting John Cruz on the air, former HSBC vice president, who's going to sing like a canary on this. But you got Comey, who was tied to the Clinton Foundation, why he was on the most corrupt bank in American history. These people do have to go to jail. But, man, can you hear the mainstream media? Can you hear CNN? They're going to be liking this to the Bastille and the French Revolution.
Well, that's where it probably goes. I mean, I don't think it's good to have any kind of violence at all. We don't advocate any violence ever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, people are at the boiling point, and, you know, you look at what's happened. Basically, they've had all their money stolen since 2000. That's the average household income in the U.S. has actually gone down since 2000.
By $4,000.
You know, and that's a time when, right, and that's a time when, you know, there's been inflation and everything else. And what is, where does that money go? Well, the 1%, the 0.1%, those people have been doing very, very well. And that's where it basically has gone. You see a number of different areas, and, you know, it has to do with the way that the financial system is structured, organized, and run. And it's, you know, these are the kind of things that are going to have to be, you know, there's no representation of the middle class in Washington, apparently. They're just completely captive to the people who actually are in this, this group of people who are taking all the money.
Yeah, I'm going to throw something out at you that I'm going to get into in the last 30 minutes of the show tonight, and it's something I'm going to be writing about over the next 2 days. I discovered in 2008, Chris, that there is an old New World Order, the old money, the Rockefellers, the Rothschilds, and so forth, and there's the new ones, like the Rupert Murdoch, Sitko, you know, leaders of the BRIC nations, and so forth, and there's a real battle going on. And have you noticed that with Rupert Murdoch and Fox, they have become a staunch Trump supporter after just vilifying him in the spring?
Yep, I noticed that. And, you know, the only thing that I would say about that is you notice they just got rid of Roger Ailes. And that may be why he's gone. I mean, the timing is actually quite suspicious. And when I saw that, it was like, okay, they had this stuff on him, and, you know, a company like that can basically pull the trigger at any time. They can keep things tamped down. They can keep people under the lid. They can keep a lid on the whole thing. But this thing came out exactly at the time of the Republican convention. They're trying to do it so it's not going to get all that noise. And, you know, and they've got everybody locked up in contracts. So it's not like Greta and you know, Sean Hannity and the others are going to, you know, walk away and go somewhere else. And Roger Ailes, I mean, he's pushing 80 anyway, so he's probably not going to be starting something new. I mean, that's a lot of work. So I think that, but I do think the timing was very suspicious on that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Murdoch's two sons are going to be the ones running it, and I think you're going to see this place, you know, Fox News is going to turn into, you know, MSNBC.
That's I'm going to really develop this in the third hour, but I'm going to give you another teaser on this. I know for a fact, and it's been covered in the media, but didn't get very much media coverage, mostly by people like us, not the mainstream. But Trump met with Murdoch and his wife in Scotland at his resort, his golf resort. And people, and I mean people, multiple people tell me this is where the deal was hatched. Here's the deal. And it's only one face of the deal, but I'll just give one teaser out here. North Shore Alaskan Oil. Murdoch has been held down in the oil business by the Rockefellers. He works a lot with Dutch Shell and some other companies, but they were tied into Citgo in 2008, which is why Sarah Palin was the vice presidential candidate with McCain, because they wanted to open up the North Shore if they won the election. And the old guard says, not going to do it. And Murdoch is using Trump to that end. And let me tell you where the proof of that comes from. And I'm going to elaborate on this in detail in the third hour. Trump, in his acceptance speech, said we'll no longer encumber and prevent energy companies from fulfilling their missions. In other words, North Shore is going to be open for business if he's elected.
Yeah, I think that, you know, the North Slope, yeah, the northern slope of Alaska has got huge oil reserves. I mean,
right. Monster
oil reserves. They know where they are. They know exactly where they are. And they're not that hard to get to. They've got some of the infrastructure. I mean, you've already got the pipeline up there in Alaska that takes the crude down to Valdez to the shipping terminal there. And they, you know, that kind of infrastructure is already there. They've done all the engineering work. They know how to do it. So it's just a question. It's a political question and a question of whether the powers that be want to allow this kind of competition. And the answer is what they usually do is they say, well, yeah, we'll let you do it, but you're going to have to sell us, you know, some percentage of it at whatever. And that's how it works. So they'll, you know, you think about it. How many families are there that control basically the banking system and all this other stuff? 13 families in the world. That's what I've been told. The 13 families, and these families are worth literally trillions of dollars. So, you know, that is, you know, people say, oh, this person's the richest person in the world. He's got umpty-ump billion dollars. That is not the richest person in the world. If you had $1 trillion, you don't want people to know how much money you have because it's nothing but problems. And quite frankly, I mean, it's not like you can go out and buy any more nice cars or planes or anything else at $1 trillion. I mean, what's the point? So what they do is they just use it to keep control and to maintain their position. That's basically all it is.
And well, you're right. In the old days, go ahead.
Yeah, I was going to say what they do is it's fundamentally an operation that skims money off of systems. They found, you know, the mother of all loads is actually the central banking system, and the central banking system is the most profitable business in the world. Because you're basically issuing currency, and, you know, there's a debt that comes on along with it, but the fact is that the currency is being issued, and the business model is issuance minus redemption equals profit. It's like printing a $100 bill. There's a former Federal Reserve Board member who said the $100 bill is the most profitable thing in the world because at the time it cost 7 cents to print, and it's worth $100. So that's it. That's what you're talking about, and all the other things have been, you know, driven to basically create a system where money gets you know, taken off the top and goes into these companies and corporations, they all end up at the same place.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. In fact, when you said that the super rich, and I've heard out of the 13, there's four that stand above the rest. Let's see if I can remember. Oppenheimer, the Lee family, the Rothschilds, the Rockefellers. And I am aware of that 13 figure. It's interesting, you know, when I was teaching undergrad, so she was kind of interesting, Chris. The author, Daniel Henslin, actually said he thought about 50 families ran banking in the world. I could not believe I read that in a mainstream, you know, college textbook. But the point I was going to make was this, is that in the old days, Rockefellers would own Corporation A, B, C, D, on in infinity. And what they learned how to hide their wealth was they created subsidiary holdings. A owns B, B owns C, C owns D, but A owns the whole chain. They control them through power, even though they don't own them directly and it doesn't show up on their tax returns. So you're absolutely right. They try to obscure their wealth, they try to stay in the background, and they use the front people like Obama to bring them what they want.
That's correct. That's pretty much how the system works. And it's worked until now, and I think it's about to stop working. It looks like it's going to have some problems. And, you know, I'm hearing all kinds of things. There's some things I can't say yet, but I will hopefully be able to share with you in the next month or two. But I think you're going to see some, large changes with the way currency is issued and the way that currency is managed, and that frankly might also be tied in with this election as well. So we'll see what happens. It's going to be a very interesting time up until November. I would be very surprised if nothing happens between now and November.
Well, I am seeing that we're going to be looking at a situation where I think we're going to go to a digitized currency. I don't think that's any secret. And I think that, take your pick. Is it going to be Bitcoin? Is it going to be something else? I mean, that we can hold that out for debate. But I think at the end of the day, there's no question what we're going to see here is we're going to move away from paper money, because paper money is on the junk heap of history anyway.
Absolutely correct. But there are people who definitely like paper money, because when something's in your hand, you can actually have some control over it, as opposed to something in your iPhone that someone can turn on and off at will. So that's one aspect of it. We actually have a company called SafeCash, which is focusing on developing some of this technology. And, you know, Bitcoin's an interesting thing. It's an interesting experiment, but it's actually grown up into something that I think is, offers people hope, because it is outside the banking system. The reason it works is because people just get the coins for mining. The coins are issued. The issuance model isn't where you have some kind of asset and then someone puts it in a vault somewhere and then you issue the token. The token, which is the coin, the digital coin, is just issued. And so there's no money involved in that. They just get the coin, and then what happens is they take it and they sell it on an exchange, and they can exchange it for U.S. dollars or something else. So it's a very interesting thing. You are not, people who use Bitcoin, and we know lots of them, we use it ourselves. In fact, on Unseen, you can pay in Bitcoin if you want to be completely private. We don't care. That's fine with us. And, actually, the credit card processing fee is non-existent. So for us, it's actually better to take Bitcoin, and we just sit on them, and they've actually gone up. And I think actually they're going to continue to go up. Now, there's, one very, very possible problem with it, which is that it could be blocked. And, as soon as that happens, someone could say, well, we're going to make Bitcoin illegal. And they could do that. They could do it with a stroke of a pen. And either an executive order, or probably more likely is something from FinCEN, which says, well, Bitcoin is not going to be, it's a money, it's a currency, and it's against this law, and we're going to start interpreting it this way, and everybody handling it is going to be put in jail if you use it. That's what they could
that's
do.
Where...
I'm not... Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to try to move away from it. Look at what they did with Kennedy and the silver certificates. I mean, as soon as he died, they all went away.
So that's exactly correct.
there's no question that's what they're going to do. This is, we could go on and on forever, but we got about 2.5 minutes left, and I wanted to leave enough time to talk about Scene.life. It's something that I love and participate in every day, and tell people about the experience they're going to have if they come and join Scene.life as opposed to participating on Facebook.
Well, the first thing you're going to notice is that you're, you know, if you have the point of view that is being punished on Facebook, and you're doing something like pointing out where the police are being abused, or where you have some kind of a conservative, or you might have a religious viewpoint, you are welcome at Scene.life. We don't censor people. That's the first thing. The second thing is it's very much like a Facebook experience, and we're still in the process of upgrading things on the site, but I think by and large most everything is now working and working pretty well. And this is a place where you can go and see and share your stories. One of the reasons why we started this was I shared a story on Facebook on the organ harvesting that's going on the Falun Gong in China, and they basically blacklisted the story and sent it down the pile. They couldn't get it to friends. My friends said, hey, I saw this story, and I couldn't share it with anybody. And it turns out that, of course, Zuckerberg is trying to get into China and curry favor with the Chinese communists. And that's why he did that. So this is why we have Scene.life. It's a free and safe place to go. It's a great place to post things, to invite your friends. We don't keep extensive log files. If you delete your account, you delete things, they're gone. So it's not like we're collecting anything. We don't work with the security agencies like Facebook does. And, you know, it's just a very simple and safe place to go and share things with your friends. Like-minded people. If you're tired of being stomped on by Facebook, Scene.life is a great place to go.
How many subscribers do we have now at Scene.life?
We're up over, I think, 110,000. I haven't checked for a few weeks or so, but last time I checked, we were up around 110,000. So it is growing pretty quickly. And, you know, really what it is, this is a network, and it's about more people who come, you'll get more people. So, you know, you can bring your friends, you can invite everybody from Facebook. If you have Facebook, you don't have to give up Facebook. It's not like we're saying you have to give up Facebook to use Scene.life. But Scene.life, I think, as people start to move over, they're going to start to realize this is a good place. And it's the kind of place where you know you don't have to look over your shoulder worrying that you're going to get banished, you know, every time you turn around. And you look at what's happening with Twitter. Well, we all have. And, you know, I quit my Facebook account about a year and a half ago. Quite frankly, I don't miss it a bit.
Yeah, I don't either. Well, CK, we're out of time, but I want to thank you for coming on and sharing your insights on the political situation and banking that we're going through, as well as educating the public on what they hear me talk about every week, which is Scene.life. And we look forward to having you back again. We need to have you on as a regular because you've got great insights. Thanks for joining us.
You're welcome. Thank you, Dave, and thanks to all your listeners. Take care. Have a great evening.
Okay, thank you. And we'll be back in hour number two with Mike Adams from Natural News. And we're just getting started, folks. A lot of stuff ahead. We'll see you on the other side.